哈哈哈哈哈哈哈
What is that, Jeff?
What's up?
Stop it. Just stop it.
That was my warm up.
You're like Lucy Loveless.
I'm
Wasn't
like Lucy,
that the Xena, the warrior princess?
I was about to say, did you actually say I'm like Lucy Loveless? I wanted to make sure that that's what I heard you say.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was definitely a Xena, the warrior princess
that's
yell.
True. I am Ron Swanson's
Xena,
wife.
The warrior princess, and Dr. Quinn, medicine woman, are both equally like my dream women of my youth. We watched a lot of episodes of that, and I was really into wagon women and... apparently women that fought dragons and things. So
do you ever watch the Pioneer Woman on Food Network then? That would be great for you.
No, I don't. Well, and at this stage, Jeff, if you're not Dr. Quinn, frankly, I don't have time for you. If you are, if I am not your Scully, which I'm trying to grow my hair out right now to match that. How great would that be to have Scully hair and to get a Bowie knife? I'm in.
Hey. I'm all about Hercules, Kevin Sorbo. He's the man. You could be Hercules.
Never watched it. Never
That's
heard
the
of
dream.
It.
By the way, did we even introduce the show? It's This Week in Mormons, everyone. Your Mormon news commentary show.
In case you couldn't gather
still,
by
if,
what
if
we actually
talk
about.
You're still listening after the past minute and 40 seconds or so. That's what's happening.
We talk about Mormon things. This
like
is a
Xena
show
Warrior
where the Mormon issues are brought up. Where we talk the deep-seated issues of Mormondom. Jeff, are you eating a dinner of some sort?
I'm eating an entire meal on this week's episode. This isn't some of the nonsense you do when you eat Twinkies for 30 minutes. I have a delicious dinner of mushrooms and asparagus and rice and chicken in front of me. Homemade by the hand of my beautiful wife.
Can you not let that sit for a minute while we do this show, buddy? Do you want to back to this?
I've earned this, man. I've earned this privilege.
After putting up with me for... how many years have we been doing this? 4 years? 5 years? It's great.
Five. Yeah, five and a quarter. Good. Yeah.
All right. Well, don't chew into the microphone. Respectful. You're disgusting. Everybody, I apologize for my co-host. He is just a vagabond. Anyway, so this week, we have
How
some cool
you?
Stuff. We got show stuff coming up. We have an interview with the director and producer of the movie Freetown.
So
Jeff's
stay tuned.
Gastronomical journey through... the mushroom field.
My gastronomical journey will take me to Freetown. I'm going to eat some
Boom
fufu.
Town, baby.
How are you? I am delightful.
You bought a second Toyota Camry. You are a Camry family at this point.
I like that you would make fun of this when you have owned two Camrys in the past 5 years.
No, absolutely. So you've made the decision, though. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just saying we'll never see Jeff come home with a Prius. He's made the decision, the Camry.
We almost bought a Prius.
Don't talk with your mouth full. Do not look at me. Look out of camera. Sorry, everybody.
We almost bought a Prius. Jeff. We thought about it. It was good. Eating chicken's a lot harder to eat than like a fruit roll up when you're trying to talk.
You're such a dork.
It's much more complicated. So
Let me tell you about my life then.
Please do.
Chew.
Please, you tell us about your life and I will chomp into the microphone. It's going to be a perfect balance.
My life, let's see, what did I do this last week? I did nothing. I've done nothing, Jeff. This is the first
week. Was it not your High Council Sunday this past Sunday?
No, let's see. I did not go to the Baptist church on Sunday. I had a PPI on Sunday, which was interesting because I went in and I was like, I may not have a job. I'm sorry for everything that I've done. And he said, it's okay. It's okay. You still got a job. You're still doing fine. Which was very comforting for me. Yeah. No, they really do.
But I take it then you did not speak on Sunday.
No, I had to go. I went to another ward in Chillicothe, a town near us. And we just had stake business. I do a lot of reading in
now,
this calling.
I understand I understand they have a movie theater in Chillicothe. Please.
They do. A Cinema 6. A sixplex.
And how do you find that?
Oh, I love it. They have one movie that's within my ratings criteria that I use.
By and, content or by quality?
By ratings, yeah. Yeah. No, the quality, I mean, it smells, it's a constant smell of urine in there, which I'm okay with. I don't mind changing my clothes when I come home because it's only like 25 minutes away. So at that range, like, it's worth it. It's worth it. I'm making the right choice.
The dream has been lived. Passive voice
every day
will be used.
Absolutely.
Love will be shared. So, yeah, our big event was the fact that we purchased an automobile after much hunting. I'd been taking the bus ever since I started my new job. Now, I don't have to do that. I'm saving so much time. It is delightful.
How much time are you saving, Jeff?
The bus took an hour. I go about 25 minutes to drive to work. So, I don't mind. I mean,
it's almost a wash.
I used to sit no, it's not. That's half the time. Literally half the time. Half the
literally.
Time.
So and next now, week, I'm in Salt Lake City, everybody. If you'd like to do a Twin Meetup, come see me. I'll be at the Village Inn.
I feel like you say this, but you never actually do the Twin Meetup. You should probably actually do the Twin Meetup.
I'll do the Twin Meetup. Like, I don't think that there's that many people that want to know me in real
life. This is what you do.
I feel like
this is what you do. You go to the Chick-fil-A and Sugar House. You go to the counter and say, I want all of your cookies. All the cookies you have.
Now what you think you heard was, I want a lot of cookies.
Exactly.
What I actually said was, I'll take
all the cookies you have. You get those delicious Chick-fil-A cookies. And then the people sit with you, and you laugh, and you commune. You take pictures from the meetup, and then we use everyone's images in our own marketing to show how cool we are. That's what we do.
There's one time I went to that Sugar House Chick-fil-A, and there was a guy and a girl, and they were in a competition to see who could sell the most calendars. And the girl, after I did not buy a calendar, she sold one and then laughed in his face and said, ha, 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 I win. So I bought 5 calendars and left them on the counter and said, I want you to just give these away to homeless people so that you can win, so that you can beat her. And she got really mad and pouted and complained to the manager in front of me.
Are you serious?
It's a great memory for that
Chick-fil-A. That is a beautiful Al Doan story I'd never heard before. And that's
that was one where I just went and said, let's crush this snarky, pretentious woman. And we did.
Well,
me and Javier.
Well done. Well done. The dreams have been lived. I've
5 calendars sold in one night.
I've never
he
been
won.
So proud. So in,
I hope it was a trip to Florida.
In church on Sunday, it was the 5th Sunday, you know. So we had a combined third hour where we learned about social media from someone in Stake Public Affairs. And it
that's good.
Was not as good as our presentation. I can say that both objectively and subjectively. Well, I learned that hashtags are like what you should use for everything. Hashtags are basically like search keywords. And when you put them on stuff, it makes it so Facebook
now,
finds
now,
your content.
You can mock this a little bit, but a lot of these people probably had no idea what a hashtag is.
And
so
I agree with you. That was fine, but the funny part was the main part of the thesis where it was basically like, if you're just going to get online to do missionary work and be a Mormon, you shouldn't waste your time on social media. So, but then the whole presentation was basically like why you should get online and use social media to spread the gospel. So
I feel like that is sort of us as a church. We have a very confusing strategy with
like,
what we should.
Hey,
should not be
this
doing.
Is what you want to do: sell this car, and then you talk about how this is not the car that you should actually purchase, but this is the car that you should purchase. It makes no sense.
I feel like this analogy is only happening because you just bought a car.
Might be true. Who's to say? You know, it was a all right, it was a delightful Saturday of Camrys and Payway. That's all anybody can
do. So
to
lead out
for.
This week, guys, next week in just a couple of days, we have General Conference.
Yes, sir.
We're going to do conference predictions to lead out this show.
You want to lead out? Okay. We usually do them at the end.
Well, and then following that, I say we do Freetown. We talk about Freetown the movie. We got free screeners. That's how important we are. And then we go on with the
show. I was
going
to bring in the Freetowners a little bit later. Just to
To
keep
all right.
the people here. To hear
at your leisure.
The things.
At your leisure.
You want to talk conference predictions? All right, Al, it's your turn. What do you predict from the conference?
All right. General Conference, no new temples. But they are going to announce another MTC, and it's going to be in Chicago. Don't laugh. This is a real thing. The Chicago MTC. And it's going to be the Midwest hub. Because they can't balance it all right there in Provo. They need one almost east. And Chicago's a perfect city full of great food. I mean, deep dish pizza every Thursday. Instead of getting Pizza Hut to bring stuff in, you get Lombardi's. It'd be delicious.
Okay.
So
okay.
There's that.
Uh-huh.
Also, I predict we, well, obviously, we've known about this for some time. We'll be releasing Elder Perry from the Quorum of the Twelve. And then calling, but no.
Shane M. Bowen to the 12.
I was going to say Linda Burton, but she's a woman.
And women don't matter in the church.
Women can't hold priesthood offices.
Don't frown, wife. That was a joke. Oh, she just shrugged like, I don't care.
She went and snatched your mushrooms right back up.
I still have my mushrooms. She can't have them. They're mine. They're my shrooms.
What are your predictions, Jeff? You have real predictions.
Yes and no.
Will we hear four times from Elder Holland or just twice?
Actually, I'm going to say just once. One time from Elder Holland. That's all.
Who's the doubler? Who gives us two?
Well, the only doublers, as always, are the First Presidency.
That's not as always. Sometimes
that's true. Because didn't they shake it up last priesthood meeting?
Yes.
And I was like, what's this all about? I come to priesthood meeting to hear from the First Presidency laying it down. I'm a man of tradition, traditional values, traditional thoughts and practices. I don't want change. That's a good point. But still, they never double. The only ones who do double up is the First Presidency. They will never have Elder Holland speak in like priesthood meeting and then give another talk on the Saturday morning session or something. The 12 always give their own talk. Now, that could change.
All right. Will we have any new temples? I say no new temples.
Officially, I'm still leaning on no new temples, but if we do get new temples, I will be publishing a temple prediction article at the end of this week.
Yeah.
But I will say my number one and two are likely in Côte d'Ivoire and in like Bangkok, Thailand, or maybe even Cambodia in Phnom Penh, because they just got two stakes there.
Is Thailand stable enough to have a temple right now? Aren't they still going through some sort of a coup?
They have coup problems, but I don't feel like it's like, so from a political standpoint, it's difficult maybe as far as red tape, but I feel like from a societal, you know, level of stability and violence, I don't think it would be a problem, but I'm not there. Cambodia is pretty stable too. I could see that being a part of the world that needs to be serviced by a temple, because right now they have to go to Hong Kong. And that's
Hong Kong.
That's a trip. And the church has grown a lot, especially in Cambodia. Church growth in Cambodia has been very, very impressive. It's very interesting.
Oh, has it? Okay. Any new missions, Jeff?
They don't usually announce those in conference. Those come out via press releases. Probably not because they've already announced new missions for this year and called the mission presidents for those missions. So that they don't announce new missions until the beginning of every year, because then the new missions show up in July of the year in which they are announced. So know that.
Will they announce that we don't have to feel guilty for indexing anymore?
No, I predict that the Perpetual Education Fund will cease to exist.
No.
They will say it is no longer
perpetual.
Is that
for real?
Are
you really predicting that? Because I think that's dumb.
No, I don't believe that at all. I think that'll last for a long time.
Yeah, it was like a landmark thing by old Gordon B. Hinckley. Did you know Gordon B. Hinckley was a young man before he was an old man?
Yeah. So, folks, there's this movie made by, I believe, the Living Scriptures or something. Maybe we should just, it's 40 seconds long. We could watch it and laugh or not. Well,
all right, I'm
while
down.
We're talking.
Hold on, let me pull it up.
Oh, we could put it in the Hangout even if you want it, Al.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's the power
it.
Of
Bring
technology. What is this thing doing?
I'm going to watch it with you, boy.
What is this thing doing? Yeah, accept.
Yes, obviously.
Okay, it was letting me in the app. Now let's add this in here. So, folks, what this is a Living Scripture thing about Gordon B. Hinckley. You know, like he is the man. Here we go.
Before he was a prophet, he was a boy.
Yep.
Before he taught others, his mother taught him.
Not his father.
Before he was an older man, he was a younger man. Before he was revered, he was reviled.
He was a younger man.
He became President Gordon B. Hinckley.
Before?
It's going to be the movie of the
Before
year.
Before he was a grown-up, he was
the
a
movie
young man.
Of the year. So that...
Before he was a boy, he was a baby.
So that's happening. And we left a comment that said, great movie or greatest movie, and somebody plus-oned it. So that's great. So that's happening. You know what else is cool that's happening? You know, there's the first what? Ever Bosnian missionary is going to be serving. So not the first missionary.
Do you have an article for that? Or are you?
No, not
that
the
up?
First missionary going to Bosnia, but the first ever missionary from Bosnia and Herzegovina is going to serve a mission, which is pretty cool. I mean, it's a difficult country. I'm sure the work is slow going. You have a mixed population.
Wait, where did you get called
I believe
to?
You got called to Manchester, England.
Oh, yeah. That
Which is...
I bet he never goes back to Bosnia.
Yeah, he might conveniently, you know, miss the flight home.
Story of
Which,
my
in
life.
The event he does, it's probably just a Ryanair flight, so the church is only going to swallow like 15 pounds. So it's not that big of a deal. If it happens. But I think it's super cool. I mean, that's great. You know, I mean, Bosnia settled down finally in the later 90s. It took a long time, and I'm sure missionary work there is slow going. I believe it's part of the, I think it might be part of just, I think they call it now just the Adriatic Mission. But that's cool news. It's always cool to see new Good. Missionaries coming out of new places.
What is Spencer W. Kimball's vision? He said that the world would support itself as these countries, they'd start, Bosnians would serve in Bosnia. But, Russians would serve
that's
in
the plan. I mean,
doesn't need to be Americans.
Some of that
over,
has already
you know
come
saying?
True. I mean, you only have Venezuelans serving in Venezuela.
You so. Only have Liberians serving in Liberia.
Do you really?
More on that later. There's a fun little how do you say it? Daguerreotype? Daguerreotype?
They're called a daguerreotype.
Of Wilford what Woodruff, taken during the Nauvoo era. He was about 37 okay. years old. And Ron Fox and... Yeah, it was purchased on eBay by Ron Fox and Anthony Christensen.
Of Anthony's Antiques and Fine Art.
So they found this. It's very rare. They didn't know it was out there. They just found this this dude.
I wonder how much it went for. I mean, if it's an old auction, if it's ones like I've been on or watched, I can see them. But can I go see an old one that's closed if I'd never had anything to do with it?
Yeah, you can. The eBay listing had no name, but the description stated, handsome, intelligent-looking man.
Okay. I want to find out how much...
Only they'd have
we
known.
Need to find out how much they purchased this for.
Well, just Google handsome, intelligent-looking men, and I'm sure... and I'm sure...
I was so not up. Even thinking while you told me that, I started typing handsome, intelligent, and then I said, wait a second.
It's a trap, Jeff. It's a trap.
It's a
Google
trap.
Image searches of...
Will... Ford Woodruff. Where's the daguerreotype?
No.
Daguerreotype. Keep talking, Al. I'm listening. I don't see it showing up. I don't think this is going to have the answer.
I'm against
this
it
upsetting.
In the end.
So that's cool, though, they found that. So let's see. I don't think we have many pictures that old of a young President Woodruff. I feel like all the ones we have are from deeper into the photography era.
I don't feel like we have that many pictures of a young president anything.
Well, I mean, think about that. If it's a daguerreotype, 18, what year this? Well, I mean, what year would that be when it was around? That was
1947.
Oh, okay. So it was
the esteemed Eleanor Roosevelt.
War. Okay. Very good.
Yeah. Let's see. So the big story of the week. A big story of the week.
I want to go there.
So there was a BYU student who, there's a lot going on in this. But the BYU student, he dropped out of BYU or took a leave of absence of sorts. And and according to the article, we don't know, we haven't talked to this guy. We're not journalist people. We're snarky gatherers of news. So according to the article, he came clean or came out that he was gay. And his
came clean.
Roommates had a problem.
Came clean, Al. Real.
He came clean. He was living a lie, and then he was not living a lie. He came out, and his roommates took severe issue with it and demanded that he leave. And then, like mob style, came and woke him up in the middle of the night and told him to get lost and threatened to, like, throw his stuff out and threw some stuff outside. And
literally thrown from his home.
Thrown from his home. So the problem with this, obviously, is under the guise of being good Mormons, they were crappy, terrible Mormons.
Yeah.
And I mean, the bigger issue of course, is that this is like, this is people being raised with this sort of understanding of how to handle these situations. And this isn't okay. This is not okay at all. In fact, this is exactly the sort of behavior that Mormons faced back in the day. And kind of a stupid, I mean, sort of a stupid representation of how to appreciate and love somebody that is obviously going through or doing stuff that is hard for them to do. It's not easy to come out as gay at BYU, I'm sure. And so to have your roommates or your supposed friends sort of react this way would be devastating.
Yeah,
I think.
Totally.
But they settled.
Apparently.
For a sum of money we don't
and,
know
and
about.
Bear in mind, he settled with the village at South Campus, so the apartment complex. He didn't throw any charges against his roommates or anything. It was the fact that the apartment complex allegedly, held up him getting kicked out. And so, sure, yeah, okay, fine, you can't be here. So he sued them for $101,000 in damages and expenses and emotional trauma and all that stuff. Yeah, they didn't disclose how much it was. Also of interesting note, though, it seemed like in some of the initial interviews, Mr. Andrew White, the man in question, said that he wasn't even allowed to go to school. But BYU spokespeople say, no, he did not enroll this semester, and he's welcome to come back at any point he wants. And even he says that he is currently working on enrolling for the next semester. So it's a little weird that maybe that got muddled up by the media or something, including us, to say that he wasn't allowed at BYU for some reason or there were any hiccups there, because it seems that he can go to BYU freely. He just had an unfortunate roommate and landlord run in.
So, pro tip. When somebody you love tells you that they are gay, the appropriate response is to say, okay, well, I obviously still love you. Let's still be friends.
Or you say it Mike Birbiglia style and say, that's the opposite of what I wanted. Or you say that. But I like what you said more. I think what you said is more more constructive.
Yeah, it kind of hits home better.
Just a little bit.
You're welcome to use that. That's royalty free.
Al, speaking
people,
of pro tips, you wrote a great article on trying to make the third hour of church, priesthood meeting, better.
Thank you. You edited that phenomenally, Jeff. Together, we are a great combo. But we talked about it a little bit last week, and it was something that I really liked. I even, my missionary or my stake president in asking was like, "Do you have any feedback for us?" I was like, "Well, yes. I've gone around to some of these different wards and stuff. I'm realizing it's not just my ward; it's all wards have pretty much a terrible elders' quorum and high priest group leader meetings or high priest group meetings." And it's just because we don't, I feel like church-wide, we're sort of in this rut. And there's standouts. There's some great ones all over the place, which is where a lot of these ideas come from. But, like, we wrote that it's a rough state of affairs for the third hour in the church, and then gave some ideas for ways to fix it. We'd love more ideas. People, come participate in the comments. There's been some good ones. Mainly Joe Peterson. He's our favorite.
Oh, Joe. Joe wrote an article, too, that's on our website right now, actually. He's there.
What was his?
He wrote an article about sort of as a PR professional, which is what he does, and we've talked about stuff like this before, sort of the weird balance or the tug of war in his mind between, the church doing our alms in secret, rendering service and being good people and not looking for attention for it, and then the good PR that's derived from, like, donating $1.8 million to the Red Cross from Meet the Mormons, and we go out of our way to, make a stink about it and let people make sure that they know what we did. And so it's basically an article about that. He's kind of fleshing out his own thoughts on the matter, just saying,
what did he conclude?
Well, I think he came in the end. I think he said he felt good about even, being public with the Red Cross stuff, because it's going to do a lot of good. It's great. Though I understand anyone's misgivings if they feel like, yeah, but it says right there in Matthew, do your alms in secret, so why are we drawing attention to ourselves?
I remember as a missionary, I would talk to the humanitarian aid missionaries, and they would say, they had all kinds of stuff going on, and they'd be like the hospitals that they were donating all these supplies to would say, the Methodists, or when they come, they do press releases about this and have camera crews and stuff here. It's like, when you come, you just come and give us the stuff. What gives? And they're like, oh, well, we should do more. We'd actually like to do more. We want to, there's something to be said for building the image of the church. Yeah. At the same time, yeah, like, it is good to just go and, I mean, do good because you're doing good, but which I think is our mandate, right? Like, it's not for us to go and get articles written about how great Jeff is or how great Al is.
Okay.
But I think as an organization, it's probably good to, you know, promote the name of Jesus Christ, which is what we're doing. You know, tell people that, no, we're here because we're servants of Jesus. We're followers of Jesus. That is why we're doing this.
Absolutely true.
We're not good human beings on the inside. We're here for Jesus.
All right, so now, everybody, we are excited to actually bring some guests on the show. A bit unconventional for us. Typically, we have our guests sit in with us for the entirety of the show, but we're going to mix things up this week. So
we're having segments. This is a very exciting time.
Yeah, this is like post-commercial break, which doesn't really exist in the podcasting world, but that's okay. Anyway, we are excited to be joined by Mr. Garrett Batty and Mr. Adam Abel of the movie Freetown, which will be experiencing a nationwide release, I believe, on April 8th.
Yeah.
Of 2015.
That is correct.
Welcome, guys. So, thanks for
joining
us.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on This Week in Mormons. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Never done this before in terms of this approach. This is awesome.
What other approach have you done? I'm curious. What does this mean?
Well, no, this is great. I've never done a Google Hangout before, man. This is awesome.
Oh yeah. This is technology. This is the future.
This is the future.
We've been there and we've come back to get you. That's what we're
this
doing.
This is like the movie Interstellar. All right. Al right now is behind the wall, moving books around, guiding us all.
Hey, Interstellar still.
It came out on Blu-ray this week, and now I can finally make my wife watch it. I'm so excited. It's going
to
be great.
I've taken my scriptures with me twice to go watch that. It's amazing. Amazing.
So
just learning about Jesus while I'm watching Gravity go to town. So guys, obviously you were you did the movie Freetown just recently. Jeff and I both have had the chance to give that a watch. A very entertaining film, especially by Mormon standards. The expectation typically is not super high.
Hold
for
on,
a faith-based film.
Alan,
right?
Don't be insulting. I feel like it needs to be entertaining by general standards, because making a movie entertaining by Mormon standards means you have to beat the home teachers.
It's like a church movie, and so I was expecting like the RM or something, and I was blown away. I was very, very impressed. I would be impressed anyway. I'm not good with words. This is why I'm still single.
So
people know this.
For background,
I didn't say that you were ugly. I said that your sister was really pretty and you were okay.
So
you're doing great, Al. You're doing great.
Tell us about
just keep digging, Al. Keep digging.
Just keep swimming. Al thought a movie about the Liberian Civil War was going to be, you know, a rollicking good time for everybody. That's what he was expecting.
So this was based, I think at the beginning, it's based on like an actual story, right? Is this somebody that you guys know, or how did you come across the sort of storyline for this?
Yeah, so it is based on actual accounts of these missionaries that went through this experience. And as Jeff said, it's set in the Liberian Civil War. And I found a little article on the church's website about missionaries that were present in Liberia during the war, and then I researched that article and came to find out that it was the sources to write that article were these letters that the missionaries had written to their mission president while they were serving, and so I went and found those letters and researched it out, and from there started a script with Melissa Larson. But it is
so. Did you ever? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it is, I can understand what you're saying about maybe past, the bar for LDS entertainment, certainly depending.
It was God's army.
It's called,
I mean, that was the bar.
It's called the Richard Dutcher line. It has to exceed.
Yeah.
Before Richard Dutcher and post.
Yeah, well, we focus on the entertainment side more than the LDS side. We say, look, that's where we want to be measured by.
Yeah, it was great. It felt like at no time in there did I feel like, oh, if you were Mormon, you wouldn't understand this, which was a marked departure from traditional LDS, like faith-based films, right? So did you ever get in contact with these guys that wrote with the missionaries that wrote the letters and stuff? Like, are they guys that you could just talk to? Did you find them?
I mean, they're all Liberians, and so at the time it was very, very difficult to find them. I did work and tracked down enough of them to hear their story. And now, as the film is you know, as the film progressed, and the script progressed, we eventually were able to contact those that we needed to make this story complete. And now that the film is rolling out, you know, some of the actual missionaries. One of the actual missionaries happens to live in Utah, and he has seen the film and is attending screenings and participates in Q&As, which is remarkable. So it's a neat experience for him to be able to see the film.
Wow, that's awesome.
So how much of it then, so you base it in a lot of accounts. So what's the balance? I mean, you know, all these movies are, you know, inspired by true events or based on true events. What's the real balance or the ratio of anecdotal stuff from the missionaries and stuff that was added for dramatic heft, for lack of a better term?
Well, we know, for me, it doesn't do me any good as a filmmaker to say this is based on a true story and then to say, oh, all of the elements were like that were wow or eye-opening, those are fake. And so, so we paid very close attention to say, look, we've got to make this as authentic as possible. And so we did. I mean, I can say that where we took liberties, it was to almost make the story more believable. For example, in our movie, there are six missionaries and a driver that pack into this car to flee the country. In real life, there were eight missionaries and a driver that packed into that exact same car to flee the country. They go through
a full day's drive.
Yeah, and they go through multiple, in the film, they go through multiple rebel checkpoints, and you know, in each occurrence, some unexplainable thing happens to get them through these checkpoints. In the letters, they go through 50 rebel checkpoints, and so the goal of the movie was to make this story accessible to a broad audience, and we did that by taking liberties that would make it logistically able to do in a movie, but never did we invent something that didn't occur.
Yeah, I think maintaining the emotions that were experienced, but putting it within a timeline of a feature length film,
which is understandable. Because if you had to go through 50 checkpoints, I'm not going to lie, guys, I feel like the pacing would start to drag a little bit. You know, that's remarkable. That's amazing too. I mean, because if you look at a map, I'm a map head anyway, but I was checking it out. I mean, I know my geography, but it's like, what, 200 odd miles, I think, from Monrovia to Freetown or so-ish, I think. And it's remarkable to think that there were 50 checkpoints, and that was just to the border of Sierra Leone, right? I mean, there were no more checkpoints once you actually get into Sierra Leone. So that's amazing they got through all that, actually.
It's remarkable.
Now, I'm sorry I'm blanking on the character's name, but of course you have the missionaries who went with the brother who was asked by mission president. What was the character's name or the actual brother's name?
His name is Philip Abubakar, and it's played by Henry Adolfo.
I think Henry did a great job. His was definitely the sort of his was the character that underwent a transition or a growth, or, you know, I feel like he has more of a character arc than probably any of the other characters in a good way. And so did you get to associate with him a lot in making the film and talking about his experiences, which were quite different? Because the missionaries are portrayed as very, you know, the missionaries are awesome. They're very faithful and they're just chugging along, making it happen, believing. But this brother, you know, he has his doubts. He's kind of frustrated by the experience, it seems, and what he's experienced up to that point. So what was that like learning from him?
Well, Henry's a remarkable actor. He's very talented. Coincidentally, Garrett and I just returned from the airport picking him up. He's here with us for the next 10 days as part of the promotional efforts. So he flew in for this, and we're excited to have him here. You know, obviously making a film in West Africa about these Mormon missionaries, the majority of the people we worked with on the crew and in the cast were not members. And some of them, this was their first touch with Mormonism. They're a very Christian nation. So in terms of Henry's reaction to it, there were moments on set where, for example, you'll recall in one of the scenes that there's the congregation that's singing hymns. And on that day, I mean, him as a person, not the character he was playing, but as a person, was moved to tears based on the spirit that was present during those scenes. And it was a remarkable, tangible thing. And many of the actors had these moments of having these this unique experiences that were faith-fulfilling kind of moments.
And then to answer your question about the actual person, Henry or Philip Abubakar, who drove this missionary, he's certainly the character. He's our protagonist in the film, and he's a character that I relate to as, you know, somebody that perhaps wasn't quite aware of the level of commitment that was going to be required of him before starting this journey. And you see that where you described him getting frustrated or he at one point regards the missionaries as a burden and is a little bit reminded that, you know, they're not a burden. And so it is his arc that came from the letters that the missionaries had written, talking about how they had to often remind Henry Abubakar, or now I'm combining the character and actor. They had to remind Philip Abubakar, of their mission and the importance of their mission, and to try to have faith. And they kept on quoting a scripture to him, and I appreciated that, because part of me says, oh, you know, that's neat that they were able to do that. Part of me says, gosh, that was probably somewhat frustrating or annoying. It's just like, you know what? I don't want to hear.
I would hate that, to quote a scripture to me when I'm like, no, we're gonna die.
Yeah, I've already taken you so far. Just give me a little space. But to me, that's the enjoyable arc that you see. And you ask, how far would you really go for your faith? Anytime.
A bunch of annoying elders, because I tell you, I don't want to be a jerk, but I think there's been times if the elders in my ward would have asked me to somehow flee to West Virginia or something, I'd be like, no, it's the Thunderdome. I'm not taking you anywhere. I don't want to sit in a car with you all the way down I-64. That sounds like the worst experience I could have.
It doesn't even have to go that far. I mean, in our ward, it's who wants to feed the missionaries this week, you know, and right. We kind of look around and you think, oh, all right. But you do, and every time you do, it results in some powerful, you know, or at least a positive evening for your kids, or whatever. So that's kind of Henry's lesson.
That's a good point.
In the film, they were portrayed. The missionaries were portrayed a little bit as sort of being targets for the rebels, right? Is there some sort of dynamic there that like church members or because it wasn't just the. I forget the guys that they were like hunting. It was in general. It sort of made it seem like they were all at risk. Is there some sort of dynamic that missionaries at or overall were sort of a target for the rebels, or was it just those guys from where was that?
The Kron tribe. Yeah, Kron. So the rebels were their goal was to take over the government who was. Which was run by Kron tribe members, and so those that affiliated with the Kron tribe, or those that were actual Kron, were being hunted by the rebels.
So even an affiliation with it would have been enough to sort of put you as a mark.
Yes, and Marcus Menti is the missionary that. Now has been to several of these screenings, and he gets asked that a little bit, you know, tell us about the dynamic of, were they after you? Were they after just this one missionary? One missionary happens to be a member of the Kron tribe. And Marcus has affirmed that they were all at risk. I mean, this very journey, the fact that they were, they had this Kron missionary with them, all of them recognized that they were putting their lives on the line for him.
Here's one thing, I guess, maybe this speaks to me being dumb. I don't know. I don't think I fully understood. There was the character who seemed to be one of the Kron mercenaries, but he was clearly a member of the church. You know, the one was kind of helping him out. So what was, unless that was just normal, what kind of a relationship is that where he's obviously involved in guerrilla warfare in one way or another, trying to be engaged in a revolution, but then he's also apparently a believing member of the church. And I'm trying to understand what the relationship is with that character, especially, you know, I mean, I don't think the church says don't fight for your beliefs or anything, but like if he was with a lot of the other rebels, I'd assume
maybe
he was out shooting people and doing stuff, who knows? And yet he was sort of actively involved in the congregation. Was that a, am I reading that right? Was that a commonplace thing? Was there that friction within the membership at the time between the tribes and stuff like that? Or I don't know. I'm asking a lot of questions, but I was his character was interesting to me because I sat there asking myself.
Yeah.
The dude's like a mercenary and he's like, hey, I'm also a good tootin' Mormon at the same time.
As long as you pay your tithing on those drug deals.
That's a great question. And, that character came from an account where, and we show it in the film, where the missionaries who are fleeing get stopped and essentially are with refugees lined up and are interrogated as to whether or not they are Krom.
Yeah.
And in the missionary letters, they describe this experience as a member of the branch presidency who was working with the rebels, stopped them at the last minute, you know, and recognized them and ultimately saved them. And it was interesting to me because I think, what does he go to church on Sunday and check his gun at the door, or how does that work? And Marcus
just
Menti,
like in Logan, Utah.
Yeah. Marcus Menti is actually it's sobering to think about, but he says that at the time there were people went to extreme measures to support their family, and essentially, to simplify it, it was a job to them. So the rebels were recruiting. There was no food. There was no water. There was no way to support a family, and many members of the church were forced or faced to with the decision on what they would do in order to provide for their family, and so they would take work with the rebels.
Yeah, survival.
Kind of running out of time here, but I'm curious, was there any sort of experiences or stories that, you know, that kind of stood out to you guys as you were making the film, or things that sort of embody, like, the message of that film that you could share with us before we get out of here?
Well, obviously, one of the themes of the movie that hopes clear is that there's the idea of keep moving forward, and the nature of independent film is difficult. Removing ourselves from the comforts of the United States to a developing nation in Ghana and being in a circumstance that only five of us traveled from the U.S. or an unknown crew and cast as a whole certainly presented challenges. But the idea of following that theme of keeping moving forward and trusting that things will work out, and certainly what was part of that, our process. And so we, as Garrett has said before, and I've said before, you know, we lived our movie in some degree or another. We, you know, might not have had anyone holding guns at our head, but we rode all the bumpy roads, figuratively and literally.
How long have you guys been working on this film? From start to finish, how long has it been on your plate?
It's been almost 15 months about now.
Wow. And how long did you guys spend over in Africa working on that?
We spent two plus months between three different trips.
Is there current danger of traveling over there or anything like that? Or is that sort of a...
Well...
West Africa.
We filmed in West Africa. We filmed in Ghana because Liberia and Sierra Leone were dealing with the Ebola outbreak.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if that was actually if you were there at the same time. Yeah. So were you planning to film in Liberia, but because of Ebola, you shifted production to Ghana, or was Ghana sort of always because Ghana's stabler and has better infrastructure? So were you kind of planning on Ghana originally?
Our initial research was to film as close to the place as we could. And then, so we didn't have any production lined up that had to move, but we initially, you know, eliminated those from our list with the challenges that
makes sense
that we'd face.
And Ghana's like the closest English-speaking country because, you know, you're not going to find all these English-speaking actors in Cote d'Ivoire next door, so I guess you go to Ghana. And Nigeria, you know, no one wants to deal with that, so I totally get it.
Well, guys, it was a great film. From our perspective, both Jeff and I enjoyed it. We've talked about it a couple of times. Just sort of, you know, it's a topic that I think we as church members
you know, we sort of pretend that the day of miracles are like real, you know, legit miracles of things that happen, like not as much anymore, you know, sort of for the olden days. And it's nice to be reminded that that we're sort of in that living church. Why are you making that face, Jeff?
I'm just agreeing with you. This is my face of understanding.
but you know, it is great to sort of have some of these stories that aren't from the 1800s. You know, some of these stories that come from our current day of missionaries or of people that have some faith and need that faith to enact miracles in their life. So really cool from my perspective. I really appreciated the chance to view it and to have you guys on to talk about it.
Yeah. And I want to second that real quick, because as you watch these sort of little miracles that unfold for them to be able to get to safety, it's so funny how jaded I think we can get as Latter-day Saints, because I would sit there and be like, oh, yeah, of course the beer worked out in the end, you know. But these are actually like real life experiences and things that you built this stuff upon. And, you know, I think it's just funny how cynical we can be, forgetting that there are really great small miracles that abound that aren't just a narrative device, that can actually happen because the Lord is looking out for us.
So, also, thank you for being faith-based films, not necessarily Mormon films, and making good, classy, well-done cinema that we can go and enjoy. I like it even better than the Singles Award. I'll give you that, Mark. I'm going to go there.
Garrett, I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
Now, I know you also made the Saratov approach, right?
Yeah.
And so which one in your mind was the more satisfying experience from a production standpoint? And keep it real. Don't say this movie just because it's the one you're promoting right now. But if that's the real answer, I accept it.
From a production standpoint, well, for Saratov,
or a personal standpoint,
for Saratov, I was able to go home each night and relax in Draper. And so that was very, very nice. Freetown was incredibly challenging to shoot. And for as beautiful as every image is that you see on film, know that behind the camera, we were fighting for whatever shot we got. So I don't know
you guys had a drone for this movie too, right? I'm assuming you had a drone, because there were some great aerial shots, and I said, they bought a drone for this movie. They've stepped up their game. Because in Saratov, what are you going to do? Have a drone picture of a Soviet building? That's not going to do anything for anybody. So,
we did have a drone. Yeah, there were
some good drone shots. I liked it.
You dork.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well,
I like cinematography. Leave me alone, Al.
Thanks a lot for joining us. It's been just a treat to have you on. We look forward to talking to you after the next film, man. Good luck on April 8th, the big grand opening is any what would you tell our listeners? Like, do you want to be followed? Are you Twitter users? Where should they find you? What should they be doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, Freetown is all over social media, so look us up on Facebook at Freetown, Freetown Movie, on Twitter, on Instagram, YouTube.
All right.
Yeah.
And you're in how many cities on April 8th?
It's 100 theaters all over the country. So go to freetownthemovie.com and you can find your state and wherever the theater is. And please go there. And the thing is, with the independent film, opening weekend is the weekend that determines the entire outcome, both theatrically and DVD and Netflix or whatever we can. So if you say, oh, I want to see the movie, I'll get around to it, it's not an option. You got to go opening weekend.
Go give love. If you want more movies like this, go see it.
And lastly, do you guys have anything else that you're working on now? Like, what project should we be looking out for in 15 months or so?
I'm working on a Google chat right now. It's going to be out in about 15 months. Take a look.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
This guy.
It's the future. It's the future.
All right. You guys take care, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you. Thank you to Garrett Batty and Adam Abel of the wonderful new movie Freetown. Please take the time to go and see it if it's playing near you, and if it's not, lobby that theater, make it show up.
Lobby that theater.
Al, remember the whole Utah political thing we talked about last week, that you especially had a hard time with? It you were not into it.
It was a little bothersome. Yeah. Sure.
So
in summary, a guy that had that was LDS and in the Senate, I believe, in Utah, the state Senate, had some, you know, just reminisced about some old times when
when church lobbyists would come and sort of bully him into voting one way or the other, saying that the Mormon church sort of controls the political climate out in Utah.
Right.
That was the story.
And but it went a little some steps farther, because he said that, you know, he was basically bullied into voting in certain ways with a lot of intimidation from the church's lobbyists, who would allude to these directives coming down from unnamed sources up top. It's interesting, though, because he stands by it, and some people who are, you know, and the author of this piece is no longer in the church, but some who are still in the church who were fine talked very clearly, said some of these things are true. This is kind of my experience. But a lot of the guys also said that they didn't have anything along those lines. They would say, yeah, the church has lobbyists who represent their position and push for an issue, but I never ran into, like, inordinate amount of pressure to vote a certain way or not.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take these things with a grain of salt from everybody. It's always good to get all the sources you can about stuff. But it is nice to see some saying that, no, this wasn't the case. But you could say, why would the guys who are still a part of the church speak disparagingly about the church's involvement in lobbying in Utah?
Go right? on.
Just that. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I believe them sincerely. I do. But you could very much do a whole, you know, take the other side of it.
Jeff, be honest, though. Like, I mean, what's going to happen? Like, if I'm afraid that my church is going to excommunicate me for speaking truthfully, I should not be a member of that church.
No.
Right? Like, I would happily leave.
That's fine. And the thing to bear in mind is, even the original author of the piece that we talked about last week said that he was told, like, there's no, like, church discipline for not voting along the lines of whatever the lobbyists would push you to do, which is, of course, comforting and common sense. I mean, if it came out that the church was threatening church discipline for not voting in the state legislature in the way they want, that would be quite a thing. And I don't think we would do that, because that's not who we are. As a people, sometimes we might exercise weakness and make assumptions within the fold about, the, you know, of course, we all support this and this and this because we're Mormons. Those are the values we have. But from the actual top, I don't believe we would ever get things along those lines. No. Most of the failings come from us as
people. Let's see. A couple of quick ones we can run through. Brandon Flowers.
Oh, I love this.
Thought that Mitt Romney took the cheap route. Thought that he was weak when given the opportunity to dispel some of those Mormon myths and when asked about his religion, he did not like how Mitt Romney dodged around on it. And wasn't straightforward and just talking about it, saying, "Hey, this is what's going on."
And
I agree.
I like that he says, quote, "I think Romney would even admit that he wasn't a great ambassador for it," which is probably true. I mean, which made it worse. Like he says, it makes it seem like Romney was hiding something. And we know how Mitt Romney is. Wonderful man, obviously, but he would, you know, he gets kind of fumbled on stuff here and there when he tries to talk off the cuff. And that made it worse. Doesn't mean he's, you know, bad for it or anything, but it's funny because this article has a little section about that, but the whole article is called, like, basically Brandon Flowers calls out Mitt Romney, when this is two paragraphs of a lengthy interview with the Daily Beast.
But, well, then he talks about how he was actually trying to be a golfer, and that's when he got into music.
Yeah, that's crazy. How he wasn't living out in Vegas. It's a good thing. It's cool to see Brandon Flowers as a guy whose father's a convert, who Brandon, of course, admits to falling into the traps of being a famous rock star and blah, 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 but then coming back around and wanting to live his faith. I mean, he even says, like, "I've made different choices than Katherine Heigl and Ryan Gosling. Like, I've chosen to stick with this and make this happen." And I love one part he says, "What's that redheaded actress's name? What's her name? Amy Adams? Yeah, I chose differently from her, too," basically. "What's that redheaded one's name? Yeah, but..."
And then old What's-A-Face.
So, Brandon Flowers intrigues me. He very much intrigues me, because he seems to be an ardent defender of the faith, but obviously he doesn't.
I feel like we'd like him. We should be buddies. Brandon Flowers, if you're listening to this, and I'm
certain you are. You could make the connection, Al. I think you have the ability.
Yeah, come say hi. Let's do a barbecue. Do you like In-N-Out Burgers?
Jeff does. Oh, I love In-N-Out Burger. Oh.
Let's see. Women's conference. Jeff, do you believe women's conference should be just for women? I believe I'd be fine.
Of course I don't, because Relief Society is an appendage of the priesthood. Therefore, they can't do it on their own.
But it's a women's conference. Couldn't President Monson give whatever points needed to be taken care of to the Relief Society presidency or the Young Women's presidency and have them talk about it?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. And
why are we still doing men at the women's conference and barely any women at men's conference? No women.
Some women at men's conference. Or the fact that no women are at priesthood and that men...
No, men's conference would be priesthood.
Men's conference is priesthood, and there are zero women. So you could make a point to say.
Why is the women's view not represented? If we were representing the man's view in the women's conference, why not the woman's view in the man's conference?
It's a fair point. I will say this at least.
Lawyer.
Things have changed from years gone by. I mean, now you get up there and someone in the Relief Society presidency conducts the entire thing. Basically, it's all women until the end. They say, hey, now we're going to have a prophet come and close out for us. And like,
come listen.
And they've been sitting here the whole time, and that's fine presiding over it.
No, that's not true, though, because they do, like, they'll do President Eyring or President Uchtdorf.
Nowadays, most of what they do is have women speak throughout the conference, and then the closer will be a member of the first presidency.
Well, because I guess the alternative is that then you're snubbed by the prophet. That might be seen as just as bad.
Yeah.
There's no winning here, President Monson. There is no winning. You have angered a generation.
And if we take gender out of it, the bottom line is it's good to have a prophet there. The prophet happens to be male and likely will be so for the foreseeable future, but
it just so happens to be a man.
This time around, he's a man, and every time before that, but
and
into perpetuity. But I don't know.
Unless you're Deborah.
Now, I understand the arguments about it. The woman who wrote this piece is a former Ordained Women. It's a former Ordained Women board member who left Ordained Women believing that their approach was not what she wanted. She still supports female ordination, but she's...
Is that Peggy Fletcher Stack?
No,
that
Peggy
we're talking about?
Is a saint. Saint Peggy. Peggy can be canonized. Okay. But I don't know. I get the argument if anyone says, hey, why do we have to have men there at all? I don't know. I mean, I get it. I don't think it'll change anything, but I get it. What do you think, folks?
Still, let us question. Let us question
now,
and
now, moving
wonder.
On to Jeff's political corner briefly. First and foremost, Harry Reid, arguably the greatest Mormon alive, is not going to run for re-election in 2016.
Arguably.
I use my qualifying, my qualifying adverbs there. So...
So why is he leaving the Senate? I see pictures of him with that eye patch.
He's tired of getting into brawls.
He got beat up by
Republican
lobbyists.
He and Ted Cruz just can't stop fighting each other, and he's just like, "Look, I'm older now. I don't have it in me like I did. I can't keep fighting Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate chamber. It's not going to work out." So he's backing down.
He's old, isn't he? It's probably a good time for him to step down. Are there any other prominent Mormon Democrats out there?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of the coverage of this has said kind of like Harry Reid's sort of a dying breed now. I mean, Jim Matheson did not run for re-election last year, so he's no longer a congressman from Utah. And then you've got Harry Reid. I mean, there are some other Democrats, but there are not many. And Harry Reid is by far the most prominent LDS Democrat.
Now, I'm a fairly conservative guy, but I feel like more and more, even the conservative agenda does not represent Mormonism very well.
Well, if
not saying that the Democrat or the left agenda represents it well either. I'm just saying we tend to fall into that silo, and I think the days of that are sort of waning. We can't be so extremist as
a No, we can't, and that's at least in the U.S. we've seen a lot of that as there's been. Yeah, you've seen the political systems evolve in an interesting way, sort of not leaving it very open for anyone who wants to be Democrats, but maybe that's getting better. But then in the Republican side, a lot of Tea Party stuff has snuck in there. And I'm not saying that yep. You might see Tea Party stuff and say that doesn't, that might work for your faith system, and that's fine. But I could also understand a lot of people looking at farther conservative views and asking how that is represented within Mormonism as well. But,
Now, Jeff, speaking of Mormon Democrats, you have one more potential.
Yes, Larry Echo Hawk's boss is going to come to Utah. But
his name is
once
Obama.
Barack Hussein Obama, noted Mormon, will be coming to Utah this Friday.
Noted potential Mormon, Jeff.
This Friday and this Friday only. He has not visited Utah since he came into office. I remember him going there when he was campaigning to be president, but he is...
Well, I bet he and Romney were sort of like, all right, I'll stay out of your turf, you stay out of mine.
Yeah. So he's going to have an event on the economy. And that's great. I think President Obama actually kind of likes Utah. I mean, he openly modeled his immigration philosophy on Utah's stuff. He probably looks to Utah as an example of good economic planning from the government. You've got the way Utah's done extremely well with the homeless situation, humanitarian type stuff. Utah is an interesting model.
Really good with homeless people.
Well, they build them houses. It's amazing. They do great stuff. So yeah. Obama will be there, folks. No word on where exactly, but if you get the chance and you're in Utah, like many of you are, find him, go to him, share your feelings, hug him.
All right, we got, let's see, there's one article from the Mormon, I hate this one, the LDS matchmaker.
Who are the people who make the LDS bachelorette now, okay? Same organization.
They are of less and less worth to society. They have an article called Meet the Love of Your Life at General Conference by going alone to the conference center. Step one, you go alone, and then you make lingering eye contact, and then you throw a priesthood session after party. That's going to get them. And then you administer a dating survey, and then you host a plus one conference viewing buffet. And then step five, utilize bold eye contact. All of these are awful ideas, every single one of them.
I like it. Just make bold eye contact with those who are attractive to you. Okay, if you're in the conference center, pay attention to conference. Don't go looking around trying to find some.
Go alone to conference. If you end up sitting next to a married person, don't worry. Work into a conversation and tell them you're looking to meet a good faith-centered person.
And then make the bold eye contact with the married person. Make that bold eye contact no matter the status of somebody. The point is just to make bold eye contact.
These people are the worst. These people are the worst. I would like the church to sue them to get LDS taken out of their name. I don't want to be associated.
Well, this is what happens, though. It's the thing is, they kind of switched it because they used to be the Mormon matchmaker. The church asked them to drop Mormon.
Absolutely not okay with this.
Okay.
Stupid.
It's absolutely terrible. Other quick ones. Let's see. Al, you know the piano guys?
Yeah. With John Schmidt and that guy that does
the guy
other
that beats
stuff.
His cello. He literally...
Oh, that's Alex Boyer. You're thinking of the guy that... he beats his cello.
Yeah, you're thinking of Stephen Sharp Nelson, who physically hits his cello while they perform. So kind of a cool thing. It doesn't mention their Mormonism, but it's from Entrepreneur Magazine, and we talk about some of the background of the piano guys. I did not know that they started out because there was a piano store in St. George called the Piano Guys, and they approached John Schmidt, who's a native of St. George, to make promotional videos for their store. That blossomed into what you see today. And kind of ironically, they never sold a single piano at the piano store or from them or anything like that. But
what?
Either way, that's what they say. But it's pretty cool because now you know the piano guys. I mean, they have millions of YouTube subscribers. Very popular. They're apparently trying to film at all the seven wonders of the world.
They're at Carnegie Hall recently doing a show. The way YouTube works, this is fascinating. But with a million views on a video, you'd end up making, I don't know, probably $10,000 per million views. Like, you could make a pretty good living.
But that's only 10,000 per million views. Think about how many more videos of millions of viewers you have to churn out just to make an annual income that's worthy, right? I mean,
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I would guess that those guys, I mean, they're probably pulling in on that channel. They're probably pulling in close to $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
Which between like
four guys,
I don't know, three or four of them, it's a great income. Just making YouTube videos and getting to go and do cool stuff.
I just love that John Schmidt. I've known him for years. Most of Mormons have because you know he's got all his great CDs. Just amazing that I've known him. But like you know, on my Mission Night, all my John Schmidt albums. John Schmidt, you know he's John Schmidt. He's doing things, does the fireside circuit, and now he's found this gold mine with the piano guys, and he's a legitimate force. Go figure. Dude paid his dues making all these solo albums for years, and now it took...
Now he can play the piano upside down.
It took a very laugh-prone, violent cello player to take him over the top.
He really
Other
did
than that,
on.
Let's see here. Quick ones right here. What do I want to say? Al, did you know that older YSA should not be bitter?
Yes. I like the older YSA. It's You're not even mid-singles. You're 26 to 29. Yeah. That is, or 26 to 30, I guess, would be the older YSA. And that's your own category to feel sorry for. So good for
you. And one Katie Bastion writes about 11 things we should know about the older Mormon YSA crowd. It basically comes down to we do not hate everyone. I think that's kind of the gist I get from this, right?
Yeah, no, basically, I agree that and to be fair, they are bitter. I was one of you, and everybody I talked to was always bitter. Now, you're not bitter when you're writing an article because you don't want to be seen as bitter, but you definitely are, especially if you're writing an article about how you're not bitter. Methinks thou dost protest too much.
We'd rather be miserably single, or we'd rather be happily single than miserably married. Is that really true?
I don't know if that's true. I've never been miserably married.
I believe
once.
We need to have Katie Bastian on the show to defend her points.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Let's find her.
There's another article. We've touched on this a little bit before. There's a sick mother made a poignant video for legalizing marijuana. She wants marijuana as a medicinal herb. Are we as a Mormon church okay with that? I think we are. We're down with herbs, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe not smoking them, but definitely
extracting
ingest
the THC for medicinal purposes.
Are you allowed to do that? Is that okay? I don't know.
Well, what if it's legal? Like in Colorado, I'm not saying legal to smoke the weed, but you know, if you're in a state where medical marijuana is legal for, I don't know. I personally would think
there's such a taboo. I actually had I've been having a similar conversation around like wine tasting.
Well, I don't see how wine tasting. Why? Because you swirl it and spit it out. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I'm just saying it's this thing that there's. It's not technically wrong, right?
How is wine tasting not technically wrong?
Because you're not drinking wine.
You're ingesting the wine and then are you spitting it out?
Yeah, you spit it out. You just swirl it around and then spit it in the bucket.
I think you still get.
You say,
I think you still
I need
get
some cheese with that and the flavor.
I think you still get
in my
some
mouth
of it.
Did this.
Your blood vessels in your mouth will absorb some alcohol. I think there's still something to be said for not wine tasting. I'm just saying.
Well, but what I'm saying is that there's things that like, I mean, when the marijuana is a little bit of the same way where the, you know, as Mormons it's like no, that's not okay. It's like, well, technically, you know, if it's legal, there's no reason not to, because we're only against the illegal drugs. We're not against, like, drugs.
Yeah, but, I mean, cigarettes
purposes.
Are legal,
like,
and we still don't believe in those.
Well, right, but we don't smoke. I mean, we're not allowed to smoke cigarettes. We don't smoke cigarettes. And if you're not smoking marijuana, that's sort of where this
the main
this
point of this, though, is that you're not involved in marijuana for the high. You're taking marijuana for medicinal purposes because of nausea and pain typically associated with cancer. And the way that the chemical properties of marijuana can alleviate that. That's what this is about. It's not about getting high and freedom to blaze or anything. It is.
Well, I think that's what getting high would do is remove those that pain. That's what we're talking
about.
Jeff.
That's not how it works. No, it's the fact that marijuana actually quells nausea and things like that. And THC has different properties if you extract
it. Yeah, and gives you bloodshot eyes and makes you really hungry.
I've been hotboxed once in my life. I have.
Good
Have I told you this story?
No.
I was 15 years old. I was in the high school jazz band, and we went and performed at Knott's Berry Farm in beautiful Buena Park, California. And afterwards, we were allowed to hang out, do whatever we wanted, you know, stay at the place, stay at the park. So some of the guys left and wanted to go toke up a bit, and I sat in their car with them. I didn't have any interest in taking the pipe and enjoying myself, but I just sat there and hung out while they did it. I didn't think much of this. I did not think much of this. Because I was just like, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not, because I wasn't. I was just sitting there while other people did stupid stuff. But then afterwards, they went to the McDonald's across the street. And I devoured a 20-piece nugget in about 5 minutes. And I know I was a pubescent teenager, so I already was hungry anyway. But it was only well after the fact as I pondered that evening and thought to myself, did I sort of get hotboxed that night, and that's why I was so hungry? I don't think I felt weird, or I don't have any memories of feeling loopy or anything. But that is that's the most I ever dabbled in drug abuse. I tell this story as a cautionary tale. Folks, if you have friends who are doing drugs, and that's their deal, that's fine. But don't sit in the car with them while they do it. Stand outside the car. Go for a walk. Read a book. Tell your mother you love her. Do other things than sit in the back of an 80s iRock Camaro while your friends have the time of their lives. because then you...
I think all hotboxing happens in an IROC.
Anyway, but the one other thing back on the weed real quick that makes me think, though, you talk about wine tasting, but I think about like a wine for medicinal purposes. If your doctor says, you know, it's good for your heart, but we still don't believe in doing that as far as I know. I think that's...
No, well, we don't believe in doing it because of the alcohol, yeah. Right? We don't believe in smoking because of the smell,
the mostly.
Tobacco. You
know, terrible it smells.
I don't know. I don't know what it does.
Whatever. Like, you don't know what it does.
Yeah, we're not.
You're from the Midwest. You should be well acquainted with Bubba Joe and his truck smoking. You should know all about this.
Oh, I am. Uh-huh. I'm just saying. I sort of those two are similar in my mind. Where it's like, well, if I heard somebody was doing it, I'd be like, oh, well, all right. But I'd be curious if the church would ever take a stand on like what the right response would be to that.
Good point.
Probably doesn't matter. It probably doesn't matter.
Well, I'm okay.
I'm not endorsing wine tasting.
It
people.
Sounds like Al wants people to high counselor. Al wants everyone.
No. I'm not. Like I'm realizing now as we're leaving this. I'm leaving that impression. That is not what I'm trying to say.
You love the agency, and you say do as you must, people.
All right, so on a sadder note, there was two sister missionaries in Idaho that were hit by a car, but they are recovering and in good condition. Riding a bike with cars, that's a hard bit. Sorry they got hit. That's not
good. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Seven Wonders of the Mormon World, or do you want to go?
Yeah, so the Seven Wonders of the Mormon World, these are different than the Seven Wonders of the actual
world. Yeah, these are not the ones where the piano guys will be performing. These ones will not have performances.
These are kind of goofy ones. They talk about the Tomb of Joseph in Nauvoo, where he built the Granite Mountain Records in the vault.
Which
in
I would
Salt
love
City,
to
which
see.
Which Jeff and I, we've never seen yet. If you have a connection for a full tour, not the nerdy tour that anybody can get, though.
Especially the one that will actually let me set up a tripod inside. I know they're finicky.
The Jerusalem Center, that could be a Mormon wonder, I guess. A sacred
number
grove.
Four.
I've been there. It's mainly trees. The Pit Tomb I'd never heard of, though. This was interesting. Pit Tomb 33, where they think the papyri a la Abraham came from. I didn't know that we had a guess on that.
Yeah, go figure. Then you've also got the Hill Cumorah, you know, great. It's a hill. Moroni is on it.
It's a good one.
It works. And then finally, the Salt Lake Temple, everyone, which does have some pretty impressive architecture and cool stuff.
I want to know, where is the Manti Temple? That's the one Jeff decided was the wonder of the world.
Yeah, it is. It's superior in every way. I will admit, on the exterior, while beautiful, it doesn't have as much robust architectural little nuances of different, you know, the different carvings.
It is not
the Salt
robust,
Lake Temple
agree,
is covered
absolutely.
In various cherubs almost.
Robust
carvings
things.
And things like that. You don't have all the robust things. Lots of robustness. Robust temples.
Robust.
Beautiful. I feel great about this time we've had here today. I am happy to have been here. I hope everyone will join us at thisweekinmormons.com and send us an email.
Yes, please.
contact@thisweekinmormons.com where we can hear from you. That'll be great.
Also, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/thisweekinmormons, and Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. We don't do any Pinterest.
We do some Pinterest. We're not amazing at Pinterest.
We do Pinterest.
It's there.
Some YouTube. You can follow us on all those. And obviously, Third Hour Power and Sunday School Bonanza are sister shows that we do.
All of which are off this week because of General Conference. So we hope you all... go see General Conference. Now remember, conference consists of Saturday sessions as well as Sunday ones, okay? It's a two-day event.
Jeff is saying this with the patronizing look, so be chased.
I'm making sure people know what happens on Saturday. That's all.
All right, everybody. Oh, hey, have a great week, Jeff.
Thank you.
We will review our conference predictions when we come back. I'm excited.
We'll see how we did. And of course, once again, we'd like to thank Adam and Garrett for joining us earlier. So look out for Freetown on February 8th. For nationwide release.
Freaktown.
Freetownmovie.com. Yay. All right. Thanks, Al. Thanks, everyone. This Week in Mormons. Happy to be here. Hope you all have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Action. Caviar, Myanmar, mid-sized car. You don't have to be popular. Find out who your true friends are.